Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing psychological distress among patients who have had cardiac surgery. We'll look at the role of age and gender in a patient's distress, as well as the importance of social and emotional support. We'll talk about current issues in the health system that may be contributing to this distress, as well as some suggestions for clinicians in managing it. My special guests today have been researching this topic. They are Snezana Stolik and William McCann. Snezana Stolik is a senior lecturer of nursing at the University of Southern Queensland with 24 years of clinical experience in cardiac nursing. And William McCann is a PhD student in psychology at the University of Southern Queensland. Ms. Stolik and Mr. McCann, thank you both so much for joining me today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for having me.
You recently wrote about psychological distress following cardiac surgery in Insight Plus. Let me start by asking you to set the scene about cardiovascular disease in Australia.
Yeah, sure. So cardiovascular disease is a leading cause of death in people in Australia. Cardiovascular disease comprises of coronary heart disease and stroke, and about 3.1% of Australian adults have coronary heart disease. Furthermore, health researchers have identified between 12 to 20% of Australians between the age of 47 to 74 at a really high risk of developing cardiovascular disease. So it's a large problem for our population in Australia. And it's a very heavy burden on our health system. The rate of hospitalisation is really high, with about 600,000 patients presenting to hospital between just 2021 to 2022 with cardiovascular disease. It's the second leading contributor to our annual health spending budget of $12.7 billion Australian dollars. Additionally, cardiovascular disease has a high burden on patients, high mortality, high morbidity, financial costs, and an impact on their quality of life and psychological distress. It represents the third biggest disease burden in Australia at 12%, which is behind cancer and musculoskeletal conditions.
So certainly a big burden there. There's no surprises. But Mr. McCann, I'll go to you. Doctors listening to this podcast would know that patients may be distressed in the lead up to surgery, but take me through the details of what you've found and the nuances there.
So for preoperative patients, before they undergo their surgery, they have about a 20 to 40% rate of depression. So it's quite significant. Postoperatively, that does reduce, but still quite high. Between 15 to 30% of patients have some symptoms. Up to 50% of patients after their surgery, like CABG, so coronary artery bypass graft surgery, they experience depression to an extent where it can actually get up to what we call major depression disorder. So that's clinically significant, that's impacting their life to an extent where they're impaired. With anxiety, there's about 15 to 40% again, so quite high rate amongst preoperative patients. And then that does reduce over time to about 20-odd percent, about 3 months after surgery. And for stress, once again, 20 to 40%, quite high rates amongst patients before surgery. And it does stay 40% about a month after surgery, so quite high, and then it does reduce over time. Patients are twice as likely to have another cardiac event within 1 year if they've had clinically significant depression compared with patients who have had low or no depression.
And Mr. McCann, what about patients with anxiety after surgery?
With patients with anxiety, so to an extent where it gets up to generalized anxiety disorder, so clinically significant anxiety, they have a moderately greater risk of cardiac events within 2 years of post-surgery compared to patients without that high level of anxiety.
And let's break down your recent review, which evaluated studies of patients with cardiovascular disease and looking at the roles of age and gender and the role of social support and health service factors. Mr. McCann, I'll go to you. What did you find?
So we conducted a review of about 40 studies, so 39 studies, just looking into what predicts post-operative depression or anxiety or stress. We found that participating in preoperative education, joining cardiac rehabilitation after surgery, having a partner, having happy marriages, increased physical activity, and greater social interaction were all associated with lower levels of distress after surgery. But with increased pain and functional impairment, that had a greater prediction of distress after surgery. But we also found something pretty interesting, I think. Age and sex were both inconclusive. So studies found that it both increased distress and decreased distress between the sexes and with increased age and increased age, that sort of thing. For cardiac rehabilitation, reliably participation in those programs lead to small reductions in distress in the short term and then moderate to large about 6 months to a year after surgery in patients. When patients valued the information or perceived it as high quality, that had the greatest reduction in distress. So in those times, they had large reductions in distress immediately, and they stayed the same for up a year after surgery. Other elements of cardiac rehabilitation, so group-led sessions, information quality, and also psychological treatment, were also the most important parts of cardiac rehabilitation.
And specifically, what's the role of preoperative education here?
For preoperative education, so this could be explaining what is going to happen, what you can expect after surgery, medications going to increase, you know, how to cough, how to get out of bed, that sort of thing. Patients really valued that, and there were small to moderate decreases in distress for those patients who attended those information sessions compared to those who hadn't.
And Ms. Stolik, you're a senior nurse, and it really shows from what Mr. McCann just said, the importance of basic information like how to recover, how to live, how to go about your day-to-day that can really reassure patients.
Yeah, that's correct. But there are some issues that patients, individual factors like barriers, so they don't want to take on board that education or their knowledge. So we've got monitors and blunters. So monitors are people that want to know everything. You give them all that information and they value and get a lot out of that information. But we have people that are blunters that just go, just tell me what I need to know. And that'll do it for me. I don't want to know what's going to happen in the surgery. So you've got those individual factors for the participant. We also got things like health literacy. So if a patient can't understand the medical jargon that we're providing to these patients, then they're not going to take on board exercise and diet and all of that kind of risk factor reducing. Well, then we've got the other patient that just goes, I don't want to exercise. I don't want to do all of that. I'm going to continue. You have fixed my heart. So often when they've had their surgery, they go, well, my heart's fixed. I'll be right now. That's the patient that comes back and has to have a second lot of cabbages in about 3 to 6 years' time. So that's also an individual factor that you can't really change that by providing education. What we can do is provide education to the family member that's looking after them. And then they can sort of, if it's the wife going, hang on a minute, have you been for your little walk today? Have you stopped eating that bacon? So that's another opportunity for us with our education our patients. And then there's the issue of the actual not referring them. They don't get the education because they're an emergency surgery. So if someone's having an emergency surgery, they've got a left main, they've just come into hospital, they've got chest pain, they've been told they've got to go for surgery tomorrow, well, we're not going to have the opportunity to provide them with education in there. Pre-clinic, and you're going to see their distress are going to be way higher because they haven't had that opportunity to have that preparedness to come in before hospital. But I did a recent study for part of my master's, and I looked at the distress of people that are given education, and their stress and anxiety levels are quite low when they come in, if they come through the proper appropriate pre-admission clinic. So in those pre-admission clinics, there are so many people that come and speak to them to prepare them. There's the x-ray person, there's the bloods person, there's the doctor, and they're just really well prepared. And that means that their stress levels are reduced when they're talked about their pain and their coughing and what to expect afterwards. So if we can get them education, if they want to receive that education, then they do have better outcomes, not only with reducing complications, staying in hospital for shorter lengths of stay, and doing what they're supposed to be doing with the tri-flow and exercise and putting on whatever they're supposed to put on, and then their distress levels will come down.
And Ms. Stolik, what are some of the current issues with the health system that may be contributing to this distress?
So I've looked at it from an organisational standpoint rather than from an individual standpoint. And some of the issues that may cause distress to our patients are time delay issues related to when they've come in to be triaged. If they've come into a non-interventional facility, which means they don't have the cath labs, they don't have all the setup, then they're going to have a little bit more distress because they're going to have to be assessed. They've got to have to do their diagnosis, their troponin, their ECGs. We've only got a golden hour with them to get them the right treatment so that they don't need to have bypasses or other interventions. Then we've got delays of getting an ambulance to get them to a proper hospital that will actually be able to manage. So these are the Australian guidelines that we've got a golden hour and they've got to get to a PCI. If they don't get the opportunity to have a PCI, then they have to have surgery. And surgery is very invasive compared to doing a PCI where they've just put a catheter in and they're in hospital for a day. So that can cause distress to your patients.
These are all good points. And what about the impact of waiting lists?
So say you've come in to have your surgery and it's been cancelled and you've waited 6 weeks for your surgery. So that's a major problem. It might not be the patient or the hospital's fault because they've got two emergencies come in and they must be done, but it can cause you a lot of distress. If you've come down from Cairns to come to Brisbane to have your surgery and it's been cancelled, so you'll hear of patients, I've already been cancelled twice. So this can cause a lot of distress to your patients. If you're a rural and remote patient, it's not the patient's fault that they're out, you know, they're a farmer out in the back of Roma, but in order for them to get an ambulance to them, to get them to hospital, to get them managed, that can be distressing because of lack of resources and lack of support. So in New South Wales, what they do is they actually do the triage in the ambulance, in the back. So that might be an opportunity for other states to think about, can we start managing our rural and remote patients a little bit earlier?
And Ms. Stolik, what kind of things would you like to see changed in the health system?
So there's a couple of things that I'll follow on from that. From the organisational is the knowledge of staff, training of staff to improve system delays like waiting list, increasing funding. What we've got a bit of a problem in Queensland, it's not so bad in other states, is the digital systems don't talk to each other. So my health records doesn't talk to my GP, doesn't talk to my physio, doesn't talk to my rehab program. So if we actually had a better digital systems where outpatients, post-op management can be sort of streamlined and a little bit better managed.
And also, what about monitoring and managing a patient's pain?
Pain is actually really well managed for our post-op patients because they have a very rigid pain pathway. But what we don't have very, very good systems is the referrals to cardiac rehab. Now, a patient will be discharged, say they've had their surgery 5 days later, they might not see anyone again for 6 weeks. So we need to have some sort of phase one rehab for them that they're not. So they've got some psychosocial support in that early phase when they really need someone, especially if they don't have a partner, if they're on their own, you know, what can we do to better support them?
And there is a dedicated centre to heart health and psychological help in Melbourne. What can you tell us about that centre?
The Australian Centre for Heart Health is our only psychological mental health cardiac program in Australia. It's based in Monash. It's a wonderful program. It's run by Alan Jackson. So if we do ever have anyone with distress, we can actually refer them to this program. If they're a pensioner, it will be fully funded. So if the listeners out there are looking for some sort of support for their patients, I recommend contact, even if to go to the website and see if you can get them actually referred onto that system. It's a wonderful program for them.
Yes, a very worthwhile centre. Let's change tack now. Mr. McCann, I'll go to you. We've heard a lot about hospital changes and system changes, but what about changes that a patient can do to reduce distress before or after cardiac surgery?
What we found in our review is really focusing on getting patients into the cardiac rehabilitation programs. They're really important, but I mean, there's only 10 to 30% of patients from cardiac surgery going into these programs. There's very small uptake rates. So there needs to be some way to get people to referred into these programs, maybe even educating patients about how good these programs are so they can make an informed decision about what they want to do. But obviously there's difficulties with getting access to these programs. increasing their physical activity. That's a major point from our review, is just getting patients out there, moving about, even before surgery. I know a lot of patients I've spoken to, they said, oh, the doctor said before I go to surgery, don't move for the first 4 weeks until your surgery. So they don't. They just sit there, they wait. And also the uncertain future ahead with living with a heart condition. Because for some of these patients, it's coming out of the blue.
Ms. Stolik and Mr. McCann, thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much, Sam. It's been great to be here.
My special guests have been Snezana Stolik and William McCann. Snezana Stolik is a senior lecturer of nursing at the University of Southern Queensland with 24 years of clinical experience in cardiac nursing. And William McCann is a PhD student in psychology at the University of Southern Queensland. You can read their Insight article by clicking the link in the description of this podcast. You can find more podcasts on the MJA website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening.